Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I almost bungled that intro because we literally seconds ago finished recording Locked On NBA. I'm joined by Matt Moore of the Action Network and Spread the Floor podcast. How you doing, Matt?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Long time no talk. I feel like it's been a while.
Yeah. You know what? The summer feels long because the Warriors end the season early every time. So.
It's good to I wonder, you know, we spent a lot of Locked On NBA talking about the revenue that might be generated by gambling. I wonder if that's to offset the Warriors ruining the league.
We never it will help out. Although it's really hard to figure out how to bet on the Warriors. They were one of the worst teams against the spread last year.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, they're such a good team, but they don't, there's no incentive for them to care.
Like, right. Exactly.
All right. So today, Matt wrote an article for the Action Network, and you guys can find that down there. I'll link it either in the show or from my account or from Locked On Lakers, talking about the Lakers not having an identity despite having LeBron James. I have a couple talking points that I had as I was reading that that we're going to go back and forth on, but that's going to be the bulk of the show. We're just going to riff on the article and on the Lakers offseason and looking ahead to this season and seasons to come. You guys know where to find me and the show and everybody. So let's just dive right into this.
So first off, I want to note, I did not write the headline. That's just something that should be noted. Like the headline kind of sets it up as a thesis of like, they don't have an identity. And that wasn't really like what I intended. What basically it started was I was starting to do to look at free agency and everything that happened and starting to look at kind of analysis of all the free agency stuff. And as part of that, that was where I was like, I started writing about all of the Lakers free agents and realized like, God, this team really is just nuts. This team just is just nuts. and so like, it wasn't really built around the idea of them not having an identity. I think that they'll probably have a basketball identity and that I have a lot of confidence in Luke to give them an identity. Like they're going to be fast. They're going to be a fast team that looks to play great defense, whether they will or not. And is built around LeBron and Lonzo's passing. Like that's kind of like what I look at them as
identity
far as
identity-wise.
Yeah. So I don't necessarily think they don't have an identity. I think it's more that was like what the editors kind of insinuated from my thoughts on the subject. But I do think that there's a lot of questions about how this whole thing is going to fit together, and trying to figure them out is really difficult. And this is where I just have had a hard time figuring out. I don't know how to feel about the Lakers. I don't know what to think about them. I don't know how to evaluate them and all this stuff. And so it's a really complicated thing.
You mentioned the other day on Twitter, you sent out a tweet that you said like this is the earliest that you can recall missing the NBA or looking ahead to, gosh, when are they going to kick off already? And this to me, now I'm biased because this is the team I root for and cover. But I when you said that, I felt exactly the same way. It's gotten to the point, Matt, where I've been skipping August, like in planning stuff, where Destiny 2's like expansion pack is coming out, I think September 4th. And I was already looking ahead to, oh, sweet, like the 4th. Like that's like, thanks. Oh, no, that's September 4th. That I have to be thinking about here, and it's honestly mostly because I also have no idea how this is going to go. Now, the way that I have no idea, and others that discuss the Lakers have no idea, to me is kind of a divergence where I say I have no idea how this is going to look, but I'm willing to wait and see. Whereas, like I see elsewhere on the internet, I have no idea how this is going to look or how this is going to go. But this is why I don't think it's going to work, or this is why it's not going to work. Where between the ends of those spectrum do you kind of land?
I think part of it is that – so like what you're talking about is essentially what I would describe as like the Darius Soriano approach, right? As like, who knows?
He was my boss at one point. So.
which allows you to essentially be an optimist without ever having to cop to it. Like you don't have to be wrong. You're like, I said I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I think for me, and I love Darius. Darius is amazing. I think for me, I was thinking about this the other day. I said this in the national discourse amongst analysts, amongst fans amongst, honestly, odds makers, they're probably a little underrated. Amongst Lakers fans and in the LA community, I think that they're considerably overrated. And the response to that is like, how is that different from any other fans? And the answer is like, look, I'm adjusting for that. Like, I know what I'm getting when I talk about the Jazz. Like, I understand the Jazz fans are going to – like, yeah, well, that's a bad example. Jazz fans are really out of their mind right now.
It's been crazy. They were, like, yelling. They were calling conspiracy because Ben Simmons had the same rating or somebody else had the same rating as Donovan Mitchell. It was insane to me.
Yeah, it's really nuts. But I do think, honestly, that they're a little overrated. Relative to other fan bases, just because, and part of it, and this is always the struggle with Lakers, is I get in a lot of trouble for this because, like, don't say Lakers fans when you're just talking about idiots. Like, that, you know, it's there's a lot of dumb fans, and this fan base just happens to be bigger. I get that, but like, there are fan bases do establish kind of cultural identities, and I do think that Lakers fans, there has been since LeBron signed a real sense of like, everything's gonna be awesome. LeBron signed, and I'm like, look, LeBron has been on teams that underperformed. That is not a thing that has not happened. And I'm like, this is what's really weird too, is because I'm a dude that for years has caped for LeBron, just caped for the man. Like, been like, we need to appreciate him. He's amazing. He's really this incredible player. And like it is with most things, whenever the discourse swings one way, I tend to go the opposite, which is like, okay, but it's not like LeBron always has this huge level of success. Like, there are points where LeBron has struggled and with certain teams around him. And most of it, honestly, I think comes down to, what do you think about the young guys? Like, that's really what it all comes down to. Because when guys are young, you believe in them wholeheartedly with, you know, absolutism. Like, everyone always believes in the young guys. That's the easiest thing in the world to do. And they're always overvalued because you don't have a big enough sample. Right? Like, if Lonzo had 3 years playing like he had this year, you'd be like, oh, like, he's a really solid player. But you would not be like, he's a superstar.
But do you get much he's a superstar stuff? I mean, like, okay. we just finished talking to Adam, who is like as high as anybody can possibly be on Adam or on Adam and Lonzo. But I don't really get very many people. Like, Kobe the other day was saying that the Lakers should have drafted Jason Tatum. I'm kidding.
But, I mean, at the same time, Anthony, like, Magic Johnson literally at his press conference said, we expect
that's your – Magic.
No. But that's the face of your franchise. Like, that's the expectation they've set on him, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why it's tough. Like, Lonzo's going to continue to be divisive. But that's really what this comes down to is, do you think that LeBron and that young core can be great off the bat? Now, if you were to tell me – like, I do this a lot. Like, I think about the NBA, not constantly, but a lot. If you said, I need you to construct an argument for why the Lakers are going to be great this year, not good, 55 wins. One of my core starting places would be young players are having more success than we've ever seen in the league. Because last year we saw a Boston team that was brutally young make the number 2 seed in the Eastern Conference Finals. We saw a Lakers team that was entirely young win 35 games and be 12th in defense. We saw a Sixers team that was brutally young win 52 games and make the second round.
And only lose to that Boston team that was also brutally young.
So there's all these young teams having unprecedented success. The problem is that last year was such an outlier. This is one of the reasons that I'm trying to figure this out, right? Is, okay, is this an emerging trend or is this an outlier? Was last year something where, look, the Lakers caught a series of schedule advantages that enabled them to win a few more games than they probably would have, even with the injuries to Lonzo and Brandon, that they still, like, based off of average injury problems, they just overperformed just like a little bit, just like 4 games, and then you're looking at a 31-win team versus a 35-win team. Or was it really this mark of, no, these young teams really are ahead of the curve? Because that's where we're going. If we're heading to these young guys really are that good. And that was the other interesting thing about it. You didn't watch the Lakers last year and go, holy crap, like, they just have so much freaking talent. it was like Brandon Ingram's really, because this continues to be the conversation about Ingram. Like I saw today, the some believe that Brandon Ingram can be LeBron's Scottie Pippen, which I'm like, the age difference does not work out.
Yeah,
that.
I was. But I was, in was, which it's been like the highest rated or read article on Silver Screen for like the last 3 days.
Right, and like I like Brandon Ingram a lot. But there's a huge difference between, like, you know what? Brandon Ingram's really good. You guys are sleeping. Like, he's really good. And Brandon Ingram is a superstar. Like, Brandon Ingram is, like, going to dominate the game, put 40 on you, and just completely annihilate you. There's a big gap in that. There's a big gap between Lonzo, who the best argument for him right now is essentially he put up a high number of volume assists. And his metrics indicated huge impact. Now, that's a positive trait, right? And I don't want to discount that. It's just interesting to try and figure it out. Like, okay, maybe this is like the modern NBA is that, okay, it doesn't actually matter if Lonzo's putting up 35. It doesn't matter if he's if he's actually dominating the game. If when you look at it at the end of it, the Lakers are winning games and Lonzo's a plus 15 in the box score, who cares? Because you're still getting the wins.
Yeah.
And that may be the model. Because, like, Draymond Green doesn't have a whole bunch of highlight plays, but that dude's plus minus from the time that he was a rookie was really good. And this creates a whole question of, is that enough with LeBron for you to be great? And I can construct an argument to get there. I just don't know. So I'm with you. We're on the same plane, which is like, I don't know how this is going to go. I don't know how this is going to go. And if you tell me it's going to go terrible and they're going to miss the playoffs, I will tell you, I think you're being way too conservative. I think you're underestimating LeBron. I think you're underestimating the young talent. And I feel confident saying the Lakers will make the playoffs. If you tell me that they're going to win 55 games and be the third seed and be better than Oklahoma City or Utah or Houston, maybe Houston, or those teams, now I'm like, okay, slow down. Like, this is going to, you know, and LeBron's preaching that process thing.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest things that I've had a lot of arguments about is how this is the thing this week is how much of this was about basketball. And that's been a huge sore point for Lakers fans.
It is.
But I also wish it wasn't, because like what I'm saying is like, it doesn't matter whether it's about basketball or not. You got him. Now it's about basketball. Well,
I think there's the – look, let me take a quick second here. When we come back, I'll touch on that. And I want to get back to the stuff we were talking about with young teams, because that's also really interesting to me. If we think this is the new trend, if this is the new normal, or if it was outlier, that stuff is really interesting. So one quick second. We'll come back and we'll touch on that stuff. So the reason I think – the reason I think Laker fans, and I'll just speak for myself, I don't like speaking for the fan base because, well, the fan base hates me. So for me personally, when I see the stuff about how LeBron only came to LA because of LA, well, the Clippers also reside in LA and he never even thought about them, right? It was never even a conversation. And the other thing too is, like, from the standpoint of, for me, I think instead of looking at it as an either or thing, and then when somebody disagrees with you, say, well, who cares? They got them anyway. To me, it's like, no, why can't we meet somewhere in the middle, whether it's further to the basketball side or further to the business side? Who cares there? That's just semantics. But somewhere in the middle is where he decided. Like, I don't think he comes to LA this year if the state of the franchise was where it was 3 years ago, right? If you were to just rewind and put that Laker team here in this position with the opportunity to sign LeBron, I don't think he comes.
I think a lot of it is you have to read between a lot of the lines of the conversation. So, like, if you read the Lee Jenkins piece and you read the ESPN pieces, a narrative emerges. And the narrative is pretty clear because it talks about one of the things that was cited very early. The same source was cited, I believe, in the ESPN article, it was Jenkins, and then David Aldridge had the same quote. So the same person talked to both people, and it was, he's earned the right to do what he wants. That's really telling. Like, that quote stands out to me a lot when I think about the situation, because if he was like, he doesn't have to say that when he went to the Lakers or when he went to the Heat. And he didn't have to say that if he went to – when he went back to Cleveland, because we knew why he was going back to Cleveland. It wasn't about basketball then either. Well, I mean, it was, but it was about like he was willing to put in the work to reshape it. If he went to the Sixers, nobody would be like – he wouldn't be like, well, he's earned the right to do what he wants. He wouldn't. He'd be like, I think I can win a championship here. If he went to Houston, same deal. It wouldn't be like, well, I can do what I want. It would be no, like clearly like he's ready. He wants to make a run at the Warriors. But he didn't say that about L.A. He didn't say that about L.A. You pair that with his comments about I don't have any expectations. And now he did say like the championship mindset and work set, and I get that. When you look at the whole picture – And you mentioned the Clippers thing, which it continues to be frustrating for me, not from a I want the Lakers to fail, but from a like it's I feel bad for the Clippers. Like I'm always going to feel bad for like the underdog.
They need to move.
Just like, look, the Clippers like have managed their cap and have trade assets and have actual like veteran NBA guys. And like if you went to the Clippers, like they would make some trades and immediately things would be like happening and they would be pretty good like immediately. And we wouldn't be in this weird situation where we're like, maybe if like Brandon Ingram really makes a leap and like Rajon Rondo and Lance Stevenson can exist, like we wouldn't be.
I don't know. I think this Lakers team has more upside if it works out than
I know
LeBron and Lou Williams.
But that thing is like we're talking about upside, and yeah. this is where fans go haywire is they believe that upside is guaranteed and it's not. Like the odds are that one of Lonzo, Kuzma, Ingram. Lonzo, Kuzma, Hart. Ingram, whoever, Hart. One of those guys is probably going to get moved.
Yeah.
And one of them is probably only going to be like, okay. Like, that's what happens, mm-hmm. you know? Like, Cleveland thought, like, we've got Kyrie and Deion and Tristan Thompson. We're set. Well, you know, like, no. Like, it turns out that Tristan Thompson is Tristan Thompson, who's helped them win a title, but also that, like, Deion Waiters was not the guy. And it's just rare that stuff all kind of works out. And so that's part of the thing you have to kind of factor in. Now, if you ask me, like, is the upside of this Lakers team better than – is the upside of this Lakers team better than, like, the ceiling of the Clippers for next season? Yeah, I would probably agree with that. But I also think that it's just – I don't look at the Clippers – like Lakers fans are going to look at it and be like, it's not even close. Like the Clippers are terrible. And it's like the Clippers won more games last year, guys.
Yeah, no, I don't – yeah, that's not quite right. I would disagree with Laker fans who would hold that position.
Right. And so that's my point, right? It's like they're at least comparable and there are at least reasons. But he didn't even look at the Clippers. And the reason he didn't is because something the Lakers fans still want to hold, which is like we're the Lakers. Okay, I'll give you that because clearly like, that's what LeBron's kind of indicated. It's like, well, he wasn't going to the Clippers because they're the Clippers, and he was going to go to the Lakers because they're the Lakers. The way it seems to me reading through the context of the Lee Jenkins piece and the ESPN pieces and the podcast that were done about it is that essentially he was like – his family was like L.A. because he was like, I'm done with Cleveland, so we're not staying here. I'm not playing for Dan Gilbert again. And – you know, obviously, I think his kids want to be in L.A. and his wife wanted to be in L.A. And so he's like, all right, well, I'm going to L.A. I'm not going to the Clippers because they're the Clippers. I'm going to the Lakers. And it wasn't that the Lakers were by default. Your question of if they were where they were – because somebody else, Pat, posed this today too about if Kupchak and Jimmy had been in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if Jimmy had been in charge. If those guys had been in charge, what the result would have been. And I've been thinking about it kind of all night, and I still kind of think he comes.
No, I don't. Well, all right, here's the thing. I think. Well, hold on. We got to take a quick second here, and when we come back, I'll let you give your two cents on why you think he still comes, and then I don't think he does. But if he does, that you would come with a few more strings attached. We'll do that here in a bit. So you think Jim Buss, who needed two meetings to get a no from LaMarcus Aldridge, who didn't get a meeting with Kevin Durant, who wasn't able to get Carmelo, who also struck out on LeBron previously, he's able to convince, he has the charisma. And I honestly, I've never heard Jim Buss speak, other than like privately. I've never seen him on camera speak. You think he has the charisma to pull off what Magic pulled off with LeBron?
Yeah, and it's not about that because it's like I honestly don't think that the charisma mattered at all. I don't think the Lakers had to do anything. I think LeBron had decided independently, this is what I want to do. And once that happened, Magic could have come in the meeting on a clown cart wearing a Celtics jersey and like ran him down. Like, man, y'all got rolled in the finals. Hope that doesn't happen to us here. Hope you're better for us.
And well, I guess Dan Gilbert convinced him to come back despite showing up to the meeting with a MAGA hat. But I think here's where I think LeBron, I think there's a middle ground here between you saying that he just comes regardless, period. But I think he's coming to L.A., according to several reports. Now, a lot of those reports are the people who hear their stuff from the Lakers, so I'll grant that as a disclaimer. But LeBron seems to be saying a lot of the right things, and it seems to be like an agreement and a partnership. And this was one of the things that struck me when he had that uninterrupted video where he called it a partnership. He was looking forward to being a partner with Magic Johnson. And when he talks about, you know, I want to be here for the growth, well, that's better for Magic and the Lakers. I also want to benefit business-wise, which obviously, duh, that's I'm not saying that he doesn't want to be here for business, but I think he's a lot more open to the ideas and working with the Lakers than he would have been with Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak.
I just, to me, it really just came down to what his family want. Because there was an indication. Oh, yeah.
Your
argument is like Jim would have screwed it up. Like
I'm saying that he comes to the Lakers. If Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak were still in charge, he comes to the Lakers and he runs stuff. And yeah. There is nobody on his level in the organization.
Well. Let's give this 6 months and see where we're at too. Like,
but
this
we wouldn't give him like, 6 months well, before.
Not gonna let that happen. And I'm like, look, man. Like when LeBron's and LeBron's still playing, like they're still gonna do what he wants. They're still gonna do what he wants.
But
like,
there wouldn't be 6 months to give with those guys. Is what I'm saying. Like that, he would show up and immediately drop his bags.
You're like, if you're like, well, there's not the institutional control. I'm like. We don't know because like LeBron dropped the letter and went to Italy, but like he dropped the letter. He went to Italy to chill with his wife. He came back. He did the Akron event, and then like we'll see where this goes. Now, does he do the off season workouts that he's done for years and years with the young guys or with his teammates, or does he do what he's talked about this week, which is like I'm really enjoying spending my summers with my family, like. LeBron's in a way different place in his life. That's another indicator of all this stuff. Is like LeBron definitely is in like a I'm having a work life balance thought process, and I'm trying to figure out what's the best thing for me. And that's like he just seems like he's in a different place, and I wonder what the effect of that's going to be. You know, now he could show up. I could get back from Chile in 3 weeks, and it could be like, oh, LeBron's in LA. He's hanging with Hart and Ingram and Kuzma. And they're posting on Instagram, and it's awesome. And that's like the likely scenario. But I am interested to see how this goes, who runs things, how that goes. Especially like if they struggle, which I think they'll
struggle.
And part of it is I think that they – and I wrote about this. Like I think they could struggle because of LeBron. Like I don't think that this is about the Lakers all the time. Like this is one of the problems is, look, I saw that Cleveland team – from the very get-go. And this is the thing is they made the finals. I get it. And they won the title. I get it. But along the way, that was a stressful, miserable, difficult team in the regular season all 4 years he was there. It was just brutal. Like, it was brutal. Like
– Yeah, what did Windhorst call it? Organizational fatigue? Is that what he called it?
Well, and just talking to those guys, you got those reporters, like you got the sense very clearly that they were just like one guy said that they were the team that they were that kid that never had to study, that always just showed up and aced the test. And it was just infuriating to try and teach them because they knew that they'd pass it. Except that I think it's different when you're in the East versus the West. And if we get into February, that's going to be one of the questions is how's it go? Now, again, though, when I start to go down this path of being super skeptical, I start to backtrack. And I start to be like, yeah, but what if it's the other way? What if it's like, holy crap, like LeBron and Lonzo are having incredible chemistry together and they're just ripping people to shreds with their cuts. And like, oh, Kyle Kuzma legitimately took like a step forward and Brandon Ingram is ready for the spotlight. And like, there's all these ways that it comes together and it works. And in that situation, it's like, great. All of this stuff kind of happened. I do think though, when we look at the question of why he came, like it can work out, however, but if it, and that's what will be frustrating, is it worked out that LeBron knew this the whole way. I'm like, I just don't believe it. I think LeBron sat down with his family and was like, what do we want to do? And they were like, we want to go to LA. It's LA. It's awesome. Let's go to LA because it's awesome. And he was like, okay, well, I'm playing for the Lakers then. And somebody was like, what about the Clippers? And he was like, ha, funny story. And that sucks for the Clippers. Poor but Clippers. They changed it. That's where they're going to be.
Do you think – so based on the stuff that we've talked about all night then, one of the questions I had for you and one of the questions I've had bouncing around in my head, and it's why I can't wait for this offseason to end, is I think the Lakers have one of the biggest gaps between floor and ceiling of any team that I can really remember in a long time. Like in terms of without factoring in injuries, right? Like nobody would have thought that the this is going to be fun team would be that big of a disaster. But that was because Steve Nash broke his leg against the Trailblazers in the preseason, and that changed a lot of the dynamic about that team. My thing is, there are ways that this could turn out, and this could turn out really poorly without the aid of injuries. Or it can go really, 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 really well. Like if all of these kids wind up being ready for the spotlight and ready for the pressures that come with LeBron. Like I just, it's such a wild gap for me, and it's maddening.
I actually think that LeBron mitigates that a lot. I think the Western Conference team that has the highest gap is probably Denver. In that, like, Denver's either going to win 32 games and everyone's getting fired. Everyone is getting fired, or they're going to win like 55 games or 52. They're going to win like 52 games and be like the three seed. And there's a huge range in between those two in between those two where they could land depending on injuries and a lot of other things. But that to me is their ceiling. Like Denver's ceiling is 52 and their floor is 32. Like it's a 20 game gap between what their best case scenario is and their worst case scenario. With the Lakers, and I've maintained this, is like, look, I can criticize, I can look at this and be like, I really hate their offseason, which outside of LeBron, I did just yeah. not it. And I know you felt the same way about a lot of stuff, and I applaud you for not just being like, whatever, we got LeBron, it's going to work out.
Reddit is not giving the same amount of applause.
Yeah. But I think I think LeBron to me is like, they're not going to win fewer than 44. He will beat enough of the Sacramentos and the Phoenixes and the Orlandos and the Detroits. He will win enough of those games for them to get to 44, no matter what. But I also can't see a team that is dependent on either a bunch of guys who are under 25 or Lance Stevenson, JaVale McGee, Michael Beasley, Rajon Rondo, or some combination of the two. I can't see that team winning 55. So to me, I'm like, it's probably going to be between 44 and 49.
So
like that's kind of a look at them at. And then like if they get over 50, that's an awesome season.
But LeBron dragging the Lakers to a 44 win season is like, to me, that would be disaster because he just left that. Like yeah. He left and well, you know, he yes, he committed to them for 4 years well, okay. or whatever. But if he has to carry another organization, then that's not even if his businesses all take off and he does really well because the Lakers platform helps him in those efforts and Los Angeles helps him in those efforts as well. Like him dragging a team to 44 wins is the opposite of what he wanted to do out here.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, here's the best argument against it is. The last time that LeBron James did not win 50 games was 2005. I'm sorry, 2008 they won 45. That was a down year. 2008 they won 45. Before that it was 2005. Since he first made the playoffs in 2005, he has failed to win 50 games twice. Like they're going to – like, that's a really strong argument for him winning 50 games. And that's why I tend to tick it up. Like, I've started to think a lot about the over-under, right? Because the over-unders are wild. It came out in one book that's always super aggressive and just kind of – they do stuff just to get attention. It came out there after LeBron signed at 62.5. And, like, everyone was like, oh, my God, hammer the under. And then they put limits on how much you could bet on it. But then, like, the recent books have been, like, 50.5, and that seems a little bit more accurate. Like, I think when you factor in, those lines are always going to be higher because the Lakers get more action than anybody. That kind of adjusts down to probably about 49.5. And so if he hits the over and they win 50, it's like, oh, okay. Like, that's a really good season. Like, that's perfectly acceptable. They're probably the third or the fourth seed. They probably make the second round. And then, you know, they lose to either whoever comes out of the West is a really good two, or the Warriors. And then that's a completely respectable season. Or they get past that team because LeBron just goes nuts and they lose in the Western Conference Finals. And that's even better. And that's one of the questions that's going to be interesting is, like, is it better for the Lakers to underplay the regular season and have a great postseason? A lot of this is about managing expectations. The expectations right now are wild for this team. And I don't mean that just in terms of good. I mean bad, too. Like, there's this thought of, like, oh, well, they could just blow up and, like, LeVar. And, like, no, like, look, LeBron is a good enough player and a good enough leader that they will get through this and they will still be a good team. It's just a matter of how good you think they'll be. And you mentioned, like, 44. It's like, well, that's just, like, what he left. And it's like, yeah, but the reality is like, they won 50 in Cleveland. And when you adjust for the Western Conference, that's probably where you're at. Like, there is, as much as I think that the stuff about LeBron's been hiding in the Eastern Conference is garbage, I do think you have to be aware that his dominance in the Eastern Conference is in part because he was buffered from bad luck in playoff series by the fact that he played in a weaker conference. Like, other teams could, like, the Warriors had, like, injuries to Steph Curry 2 out of 3 years, and they still made it through because, like, they were so far ahead of everybody. They were just so far ahead of everybody, but they were challenged. They almost lost several times because of it. Instead, you know, LeBron, like, he's indestructible, but also, like, there's a luck buffer there. If you said, I feel really confident that the Los Angeles Lakers are going to win 54 games, I'd be like, I understand that. Like, I get that. Like, that's not crazy to me, and I could be talked into it. If you told me they're going to win, like, 59, they're going to win 60 games, I'm like, I can't get there. I can't get above 55. Like, 55 is the threshold of where I'm like, there I think you're probably crazy. If you think that they're going to win below 44, I'm like, you're nuts. They're not going to miss the playoffs. They're not going to win 60 games.
Yeah, I don't know if a Western Conference team wins more than 58 games this year. The conference is insane.
Yeah, and that's one. It's part of it. Not only is it still really competitive, but I was talking about this earlier on another podcast that you're going to see a win distribution shift. So this got lost last year. As good as all those Western Conference teams were, that 3 through 9 pack also were boosted by the fact that 10, 11, 12, 13 were all, well, not the Lakers, but 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 were all tanking their faces off.
Yeah.
And there will be tanking this year, but not as severe because most of the teams tanked last year and they don't want to do it 2 years in a row. And the lottery odds are more flattened this year. So there's and the draft class isn't as good. So you have all these reasons why those teams are probably not going to give up halfway through the year. So Dallas, Phoenix, Memphis, all those teams are going to be better. So you're going to have this win distribution equalize where if you don't play, you know, those other teams could have nights where, like, well, we didn't play great, but they still beat Dallas or Memphis or Phoenix by 10. Well, now it's like, no, that probably becomes a loss. If you just don't have it that night, that becomes a loss. So yeah. All those things become – and that goes for the Lakers too, though, is the Lakers won't be so good that they can screw around. And this is where I'm genuinely interested, right? Like, the Lakers – this is part of the thing that I was wondering about with LeBron going to a young team. It's why I doubted it for so long is I was like, does he really want to go hang out with a bunch of 19-year-olds? Like, I know how they act. I was 19 once. I wouldn't want to hang out with them now. And how he responds to that, if he's able to really insulate himself, if the veterans give him like a group of guys, and if that's like that would be like a weird thing if it's like Lonzo and Kuzma and Ingram all buddy buddy, and then like there's LeBron with Rondo and Lance, his guys.
Well, I do think though that like the Lakers have really focused on young guys who want to and look up to, actively look up to older guys. Like Josh Hart. Josh Hart's like 23, but he acts like a 25, 26, 27-year-old.
MVP Josh Hart,
thank you. Yeah, he's – exactly.
And as I've been told many times, future Hall of Famer.
Well, no. I said I future champion. That's I'm willing to predict future champion, but –
Anthony, honestly, my question, where are you guys going to fit all the jerseys? Because you're going to have to put Lonzo and Ingram and Kuzma and Hart next to all the guys that you have up. Like, you're going to run out of numbers.
Well, unfortunately, the Clippers never retire any jerseys, so we don't have to. We have plenty of space up there for quite a while. My last question for you here, and this to me is – beyond the center thing, like LeBron playing center, like I've talked about that so much that I just frankly don't want to talk about it again. But to me, the biggest question mark that I have going into next season, this is the last thing I'll bug you about here, is how does the coaching staff handle a group of young guys that I, in my opinion, are probably going to finish this season as better players than their older counterparts if they aren't there already. But how does Walton handle that dynamic? That was one of the things in Vegas that you and I talked about a ton, is that's just, you know, yes, hypothetically, those guys could be squeezed out of the rotation, but that's not how it usually works in the NBA.
So I think it's going to be an interesting challenge because, like, think about who Luke came up under. So he came up under Pop or under Phil, and Phil was a guy that didn't play a lot of young dudes, and Phil was always going to lean more towards the veterans. Like, he was going to lean towards trusted guys, and Luke came up in an era when he played. It was an era where those kind of hierarchies were a little bit more set in stone because we got a huge talent influx since 2009, like 2009 through now, like it's just ridiculous. Like Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, you know, all these like down, all these ways down the line. Like even 2008, if you want to go back to 2007, like Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, like there's been this huge influx of really epic players that have come into the league, and that shifted a little bit. It used to be like a lot harder, but then I go back on the other end and I go like, well, he was a coach under Kerr, and Kerr does trust the younger guys a little bit more. He's given Patrick McCaw quite a bit of a leash, even though that guy really struggled. He gave Ian Clark a lot of leash, even though that guy had an incomplete game. I think he's been underrated in New Orleans, but whatever. He gave Kevon Looney. He started Kevon Looney this year in the Western Conference Finals when JaVale wasn't working, right? So he's shown a willingness to go to better options for the young guys, and that's helped keep them and develop them. And there will be a lot of pressure, I think, from up top to develop the younger dudes. And that's what will be interesting, is how training camp goes. Is when they get into training camp and LeBron sees Lonzo every day, because he saw him, you know, he watches the games, he knows Lonzo's game, he knows the kid. But when he gets around him every single day, and a lot of this isn't based on logic. This is what people get messed up. Like, There are people that everyone has somebody that like everyone likes and you don't. Like, that's just the thing that happens. Mm-hmm. So it's personal chemistry is really complicated and not logical all the time. So the question is, when LeBron gets into training camp, does he look at Lonzo and he's like, I really like love this kid, and like he really takes a moment to, you know, get to know him and get to know his family and like all that, and really like grows a relationship with him and trusts him? Or does he just be like, man, like I like Lonzo, but he does miss all, like those jumpers are really bad, and like he makes some bad decisions. We don't know how this is going to play out, and it may not be Lonzo, maybe Ingram, it may be Kuzma. Kuzma's like the most likely subject to kind of fall apart because of his defensive holes, right? Does he love Josh Hart? Like, all of these things are going to determine kind of how the season goes, because LeBron will have a huge impact on it as well. And then for Luke, I think though, he's going to have backup where, you know, if you're playing one young guy, you're going to be able to say, well, look, I want to get some of the younger guys on their floor because I want to go faster. We're trying to push the pace. And that, I think, could probably help him a little bit. I think it's just going to be tough because going into training camp, this is my problem, is Rondo's going to be so much better than Lonzo on day one. And I know, Lakers fans, you're going to hate here. It's not about who's going to be a better basketball player for their careers, right? Like, Rajon Rondo won a championship and probably has a very good case for the Hall of Fame. No kidding. Like, mm-hmm. guy starting point guard on a team that went to two finals. That's a big deal. But like, Rondo's just been around. He just knows the game. He just knows it. He knows everything about the game. And that's going to shine in camp.
Yeah.
It's going to shine a lot in camp.
That's one of the things that I've been kind of thinking about a ton too, is that like Rajon Rondo over a course of the 82 game season, not great. he doesn't always focus the way he should. He kind of rubs people the wrong way, but in short bursts, like playoff Rondo was a thing because in short bursts, it actually makes sense. So training camp Rondo is a short burst Rondo. And if he really focuses, he could really legitimately win that spot over Lonzo.
Yeah. Or, you know, somebody else could come in and like Kuzma could like, wow, Kuzma does not look great in training camp. Those reports could come out. You know, Josh Hart's really struggling in the practices with LeBron. Like, all of this stuff can happen. Now, it could just be awesome. Everything could again just be killer. But these are the things I think are going to impact it a lot as the season goes on. I think injuries will help it a little bit. You know, like Rondo will probably miss some games, and even if Rondo takes the starting job, which he may not, but if he does take the starting job, then Lonzo will look good and maybe like, well, we're going to stick with Lonzo because he's been playing really well, and Rondo doesn't really care, etc. Mm-hmm. I think Lance is a little bit more complicated, like. Realizing that Lance and KCP are going to be fighting for minutes when Ingram's getting a lot of the other minutes at the wing, that's something that's probably going to cause a little bit of tension, especially with those guys on the contracts that they're on, both of them in contract years. That's something else that they're going to have to manage, because like having a bunch of dudes on 1 year deals where they're trying to make sure they get their next contract, that's dangerous. Like, that's real dangerous.
My hot take is that Lance doesn't finish the season with the Lakers in one way or another.
That could happen. Like, he'd be on training camp and nobody would be surprised.
Yeah.
You know, back in Indiana by – he could be back in Indiana.
Training camp in Indiana, Lance Stevenson.
Yeah. You know, and look, it could be like Rondo doesn't – you know, it just – Rondo doesn't work out or, you know, KCP or whatever. I will just say this. Like, Dion didn't get along with LeBron. And LeBron didn't approve of his game and he was gone. And, like, I guess here's the thing. If you're important to the Lakers and LeBron's not crazy about you, LeBron's not going to press the issue and he'll stay and it's fine. Like, LeVar could come out and be just the most LeVar. Like, LeVar could go full LeVar.
He went pretty damn close yesterday.
Yeah. Like, he could go full LeVar in training camp and LeBron would probably be like, I know that Lonzo is the future of this franchise. I'm not going to press the issue. Like, I knew what I was signing up for. It's fine.
I don't see any young Lakers whose games just so obviously clashes with the way LeBron wants to play as Dion's did.
No, but I also think that some of these things are not always not
that simple.
It's not always that simple.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of this, I'm trying to pump the brakes a little on Josh Hart because I don't want the kid to get crushed if he doesn't live up to what's now becoming huge expectations. Like, you know, he wins Summer League MVP, and now it's like he's like a star in the making. Like, somebody said that to me, and I was like, just slow, just a little bit. Like, he could, like, people don't call Drew Holiday a star. Like, come on, man.
Well, that's because if Drew Holiday played for the Lakers, I think you would get some Drew Holiday star stuff. Really good.
He would be.
He's really good.
And God, if you had Drew, I would feel a lot better about the Lakers. Drew Holiday was a point guard.
This is something I will die on this hill. Drew Holiday, in my opinion, is the best point guard in the NBA to play with LeBron right now.
That's a really good pick.
He does everything that you need from a non LeBron point guard or for an alongside LeBron point guard. But
getting back to your question, I have a lot of faith in Luke being able to handle it. There was a lot of talk, like jokes were made early on about the situation Luke's in. But I really like Luke's approach. I think them playing fast, I think, is going to mitigate a lot of the issues as long as LeBron's willing to do it. And there's a whole world of debate about that, like about how fast LeBron wants to pay. I don't want to get into it. I'm just like, whatever you think is fine. But like Luke will manage, I think, a lot of it, and playing fast, I think, will help some of it. The young guys are talented enough to where they should just stand out. Like, it should just be as simple as they have enough minutes, and those guys are so good that it works out. And if it doesn't, they'll figure that out too, and they'll make the adjustments. Like, this Lakers team, like, no team is the same after 2 years. Just not. Like, no team, not even the Warriors, you know? even outside the Kevin Durant stuff, like everybody changes. Like think about like Mo Spates and Leandro Barbosa. Like there are just always changes that come and go with teams. So in 2 years, like this won't be the Lakers team, but it could be that at that point it really is LeBron and Lonzo and Ingram and Kuzma and Hart, and that's the team, and not Randall for some weird reason.
No, I just poured out the remainder of my wine for Julie Channel. All right, that'll do it though for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm trying to stretch these out a little bit longer, seeing as we're only 3 days a week now, so you guys get the same amount of content. But Matt, thank you very much for doing Locked On NBA first. So if you guys want to hear Matt and Adam and myself talk about gambling and celebrate the NBA, you guys got to check that stuff out. Make sure you guys are following Matt on Twitter and if you guys are listening to the show, I would guarantee that you are, but he's at HP Basketball and the Action Network he puts up great work there, and it's free. And it, you know, so I am all for supporting, obviously as a content producer, supporting people who are behind a paywall, but Matt is not. So if he writes anything, he plugs anything on Twitter, and it comes across your timeline, you guys can just hop on there and read it and give it a click and continue to support Matt as he continues to support the show. Thanks for hopping on, Matt. I always enjoy these conversations.
Anytime for you, man.
Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you again next Monday.